Welcome to The Point. I'm Amy Vince. Mindy Todd is away. For years, we were told to reduce our intake of fat. Then carbs became the enemy. Lately, sugar has taken the hot seat. In January, the New York Times began the 7-Day Sugar Challenge with a tagline, Make 2020 the Year of Less Sugar. And books about kicking the sugar habit are popping up too, including Molly Carmel's Breaking Up with Sugar. Today, we talk about sugar. Does it have a place in a healthy diet, or should we be eliminating it entirely? We also discuss how to improve our relationship with food. Joining us is Stacy Richmond. She's been practicing integrative nutrition therapy for over 20 years. In addition to advanced training in nutrition and dietetics, Stacy is a certified eating disordered registered dietitian, certified food and spirit practitioner. She provides individual counseling, coaching, workshops, and retreats for women through her business, Kind Eating. Welcome back. Great to have you
here
with us.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Also with us is Dina Irwin. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod and a registered yoga teacher. She practices integrative nutrition using whole foods, healing, and taking account of the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Have you given up sugar or tried to? Why? What was your strategy? Join the conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org. Before we take on sugar, or for listeners who aren't familiar with the term integrated nutrition, Dina, can you explain what it means and what your role is at the Community Health Center?
So I see patients at the Community Health Center for nutrition counseling one-on-one. Basically, I work together with the entire healthcare team working on goals to improve health and wellness. Also at the health center, I'm teaching a chair yoga class. We're giving out some cooking demonstrations once a month for the community to really show people how to utilize the healthy food. And we're also starting some group medical visits, which are exciting, whereas the patients come together as a group with the entire healthcare team, the physician, myself, some nurses, to really focus on improving their health and wellness. It's exciting.
And is this available for any patient there, or do you have to have certain health issues that make you eligible to participate
in these programs? It's available for any community health center patient. So we have 19,000 patients and one nutritionist.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot. So it's available for any community health center patients. The mission is to keep the patients healthy.
Stacy, describe the benefits of integrated nutrition. Have you seen it make a difference in people, and how?
Great question. Integrative nutrition, as Dina stated with her intro, is about working with the whole person. When, you know, even for today, as we start talking about food and eating, sometimes we can start to compartmentalize and think about food as food, body as body, stress as stress, and a whole person approach, integrating mind, body, and spirit through looking at not only food, but how does food interact with the body? And then how does one feel about that food? How do they feel physically? So it's really looking at how all those components of self come together in the real world.
Right. And it sounds like that whole mindful approach that we hear so much about is you're just becoming more conscious of yourself and how you're responding to, as you said, stress or food or other
absolutely
parts
and it's
of
all
your life.
It's all connected. Absolutely.
Right. So for a while, as I said in the intro, people were focused on this no carb or low carb diet, and we've made the switch, it seems like, to sugar. Are carbohydrates just another form of sugar? What is sugar?
So sugar is a component of carbohydrates. Our body needs some carbohydrates for energy. They're not bad things to eat. I think what's happened, though, is we have such a big sugar glut in the country now, whereas instead of looking at getting our sugar from whole foods, from carbohydrates, you know, like fruits and whole grains, we're ending up getting a lot of sugar that's hidden in foods, like really good healthy foods that you wouldn't think would have sugar in them. You know, like peanut butter should have peanuts as the ingredient. And if you read the label, sometimes it has high fructose corn syrup, which is kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. So I think just taking a look at where our sugar is coming from, the whole foods versus the hidden sugar in foods, it makes a big difference in our metabolism and how it's utilized in the body.
Stacey, want to add to
that? Sure. So if we think about the term carbohydrate, a lot of times it can conjure up different images for people of what that actually means. And so the carbohydrate, as Dina mentioned, is meant to provide a source of fuel for the body. And there's three different kinds of carbohydrate. There's sugar, there's starch, and cellulose or fiber. Whole foods contain more starch and fiber as opposed to the sugar component, although, of course, all natural foods, which are grown from the earth, do contain some sugar molecules. When the body consumes any form of carbohydrate, whether it's in the form of starch or sugar, it breaks down into the usable form for the body, which is glucose. And the glucose then communicates to the cells and gives the cells energy. The problem is when we become disproportionately introducing our cell to our body too much of the glucose or the sugar form. So how do we diversify and start to take a look at putting sugar in the right relationship with all of the nutrients that we consume, which the other macronutrients, of course, is protein and fat. So we have carbohydrate, protein, and fat. And we're just taking a closer look today at the carbohydrate component of those macronutrients.
Right. And before we went on the air, we talked a little bit about smoothies. And there was for a while, and maybe people are still doing it, this where you would put like vegetables. So you're getting fruits, vegetables, all sorts of things, and you're mixing it all up. And so those are sugars that are naturally occurring. Does your body process sort of like a liquid form of these sugars and carbohydrates differently than a solid form?
Well, if we take something like a smoothie, that's a broad term. So like you were mentioning, it depends on how the smoothie is made. So if we are looking at a smoothie that's made with fruits and vegetables, perhaps some proteins and fat, it's a mixed nutrient beverage that will register in your body as a higher satiety than a plain sugar type smoothie, which could be something like yogurt and fruit juice. So there's no fiber, there's no whole fruit and vegetable. So generally speaking, the body will register a liquid as much lower in satiety, meaning the body doesn't get the signal that that food has entered the body as much as the body would register solid food, which requires chewing, communicating from the brain to the belly, secreting hormones, enzymes. By chewing your food, it activates and prepares the body for solid food as opposed to liquid, which is much different.
Which is different. And how are most of us who are perhaps consuming too much sugar, and we talk about what too much really means, how are we getting that sugar? Where is it coming from?
Yeah, I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's hidden in so many foods, like good healthy foods, like flavored oatmeals, yogurts, peanut butters. We were just talking about beverages, fruit juices. Things are marketed like they're healthy, like, you know, all natural fruit juice. It's just full of sugar. Not to mention, you know, soda and things like that, flavored coffee drinks. There's just so much sugar hidden in those. And if you take, for example, if you start reading labels, I never even look at the nutrition facts part of the label. I just go right for the ingredients. And you're going to start to see that, there's over 60 different names of sugar, 60. Like, it's huge. And the food companies got really good at hiding it mm-hmm. in the ingredients. So if you're looking at a food like oatmeal, like, the only ingredient should be oats. It shouldn't have five other ingredients that sound like oats, that end in oats, meaning a sugar.
It's a sugar. Yeah.
So, again, a great comment about how to familiarize yourself with all the different terminologies that mean sugar. Frequently looking at labels, a lot of the terms that are on labels in general look foreign. But a great shortcut is to look for the ending OSE. So we've got glucose, maltose, lactose. So any of the OSEs are a great indicator that product contains a sugar product.
Okay. And quickly, before we have a call from Robin, quickly, though, should it be, if you're looking at wanting to reduce your amount of sugar, should it be, if maybe there is going to be an added sugar there, should it be the fifth ingredient, the 10th ingredient, or no? Like, how do you determine what's going to be too much?
Well, generally speaking, all labels are created with the ingredients starting from the highest the first ingredient moving down indicates the percentage found in that product. So the first ingredient is going to have the most real estate with that food product. As you move down the list, less and less and less. So generally speaking, if sugar is the last ingredient, depending upon what the product is, that's going to be a preferred choice compared to something where it's within the first three.
The first three. Okay. We do have Robin joining us from Falmouth. Good morning.
Good morning. I wondered if we could talk about food addiction, which is something that I learned about from a book by Kay Shepherd called Food Addiction, The Body Knows. And I actually am a food addict. It's very akin to alcoholism in the sense that you get triggered by the substance that triggers you. And according to this book, which has really been my Bible for 5 or 6 years, if you just eliminate trigger foods from your diet, you can stop yourself from overeating. And I don't want to talk too long, but I discovered it one day when I could not stop myself from eating an entire pizza, even though I was full and sick and felt greasy and horrible. And then somebody gave me this book. So I just wondered if anybody had any thoughts about why kind of the knowledge of food. First of all, I assume you believe in it, but do you? And secondly, why is not more known about this when it's very similar to alcoholism and so many people are obese and really could just eliminate trigger foods in order to bring themselves back to a healthy weight?
Robin, thanks so much for the call. Who wants to start with that one?
Well, I mean, sugar is psychoactive, for sure. It can be addictive. And I think some people have a genetic predisposition to that as well. I know that Stacey works a lot with addictions.
Yes, thank you so much, Robin, for your call. I'm familiar with Kay Shepherd's book. I know it's been around for a very long time. One of the things in my practice, I've been practicing for a very long time, working with people who have various degrees of food relationship concerns and issues. The concept of food addiction, there's a little bit of back and forth controversy in the field around, is it a true addiction or not? But based on the information that I see in my clinical practice and some of the evidence that has been shown through clinical studies doing brain imaging and brain mapping, that we can see through these studies that individuals that consume foods that are layered with sugar, fat, and salt light up certain areas of the brain much the same as cocaine and heroin. And these brain centers that are ignited, that are lit up in these scans, are also connected to the dopamine system. So as Dina was mentioning, that psychoactive component is dopamine, is the pleasure-seeking hormone. So we could equate that to, say, the spectrum of addiction, and that ultimately, if somebody consumes something or has an experience that ignites this neurotransmitter in the brain, it signals to the brain body, this is highly pleasurable. And what happens is that we start to develop this connection between whatever the substance is, and we'll say pizza, as Robin mentioned, maybe for some people it's something else. When we are seeking that pleasure once again, often we need more of that substance to create more dopamine to get the same experience. So we're looking at the connection between the spectrum of addictive behaviors and how food does fit into that. I will tell you that in my practice, there is absolutely, Dina mentioned the genetic component of it. Not everybody who has this relationship with food and gets pleasure from food moves along the spectrum to the point where it's an extreme and it becomes a mechanism, a coping mechanism, because if we're seeking pleasure, oftentimes the dichotomy between the pleasure and discomfort in life or dis-ease or emotional distress, the addiction is to move one out of that emotional discomfort by seeking food. And so that's where food becomes a major focus to change the emotional state.
Mm-hmm. I guess my question is, in a number of these sort of articles and books, there is this group of people who say, we need to eliminate, not everybody, but it seems like you should be eliminating sugar from your diet, and you kind of go cold turkey, and you don't have sugar from fruit, you don't have sugar from naturally occurring sugar. Mm-hmm. And then there's another camp that seems to be, let's just raise awareness about how much sugar we are ingesting that we might not be aware of, and maybe we need to, you know, dial that back a little bit. How do you determine if you're the person who really needs to eliminate it, or you're the person who just needs to become more aware?
Well, I think how you mentioned just becoming more aware is just super important, just to start becoming aware of all the hidden sugar that's there, and just to focus more on eating whole foods, real foods, you know, fruits, whole grains, vegetables, and just focusing on getting most of your carbohydrates from those sources instead of from the added sources. I think that's just a really good first step, and to just find balance, find enjoyment. It's so like we're talking about how sugar is pleasurable, and just to find the enjoyment and the pleasure of eating. It's food should be a celebration. And to eat a piece of fruit and to truly enjoy it, you know, without feeling guilty about it, I think that's the healthiest way to go about it. Mm-hmm. For sure.
So I'd like to piggyback onto that and, you know, go back to how do you know when it's a problem? Mm-hmm. So say you're creating an intention. Great, I'm going to clear out my cabinet. I'm going to make a plan for myself. I'm going to, you know, make my food ahead and really focus on more whole food and try to avoid or omit the sugar sources in my diet. If somebody attempts to do that and they find that it actually escalates their desire for sugar. So this is where we can see the degree to which it's like a magnet. If we could think of a magnet, right? Like a weak magnet or a strong magnet. So as somebody tries to back away and set up the environment so that they are giving their body all of these beautiful foods, but they find that it actually increases the desire, their obsession increases, the focus on hearing the food in the refrigerator calling their name, trying to go into CVS to get a prescription and cannot walk past the candy aisle without impulsively purchasing the food. So impulsivity is one of the clues to, is this becoming a problem for me, where even though I have this desire and knowledge, I cannot manage this impulse to purchase food and to eat this food. And then often it's a setup to, not everybody, but it can be a setup to more binge-like eating. Because the degree of restraint that somebody experiences with anything can rebound to the degree that they've restrained. So if I cut out a sugar 100%, then the rebound can be pretty severe and significant for somebody who has a hard time with maybe some of this body biology and body chemistry.
You're listening to The Point, and we're talking about sugar and its place in a healthy diet. With us is Stacy Richmond, integrative nutrition therapist and founder of Kind Eating, and Dina Irwin, integrative nutritionist at the Community Health Center of Cape Cod. Did you resolve to make some changes to your diet this year? How is it going, and how do you feel? Give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or you can send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org. We hear some people claim that when they give up sugar completely, they feel more energetic, more focused, and less irritable. Do either of you know, is there any research to back up that claim, or is that just, you know, people's sort of feeling?
I'm not sure if we actually need the research, because people who reduce their sugar intake feel better. And I think that's enough.
I mean, I would say, which we haven't really talked much about, but the way that sugar, in the beginning, I made a comment about the sugar getting into the cells. And there's a whole symphony of how sugar is metabolized in the body, specifically utilizing insulin and some other hormones. So if somebody is managing their eating in a way where not only are they reducing sugar, but at the same time increasing fiber, because fiber helps to soften the way sugar is utilized in the body. If somebody's actually reducing their sugar intake, the way that their metabolism is working, they're going to utilize fuel more evenly and feel better. So that would be one of the clinical pieces. Sugar can also tend to be inflammatory in the body. It can create and exacerbate inflammatory conditions. So as somebody reduces sugar, so you get a little achy in the morning and your joints are a little stiff, the decrease in inflammation can show up in ways that makes it easier to move the body.
Yes, you are feeling better.
People feel so much better. And the other thing that you touched on, too, is when you include fiber. So that's what we were talking about earlier, whole foods. You know, when you eat sugar as a component of a whole food, like in a piece of fruit or say, you know, steel-cut oats or something like that, it acts totally different in your body than if you just ate the sugar on its own. And highly processed foods tend to have a lot more sugar in them or act like sugar in the body. So if you take, for example, we're talking about oats. When you eat oats from, say, steel-cut oats, very intact whole grain, versus eating a processed Cheerios, it's going to act totally different in your body, not to pick on any one cereal. But like if you, and you try it one day, eat your steel cut oats one morning and the Cheerios the next morning and see how you feel.
See the difference. We do have a couple callers. We have Daniela from Brewster. Good morning, Daniela.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Of course. What's your question or comment?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks so much for focusing on this topic. It particularly resonated with me when you talked about the impulse. And so for me, that's how I feel about chocolate. So I have been wondering whether or not this has become a problem. I'm generally a really healthy person. Also, I cook my own foods and I focus on healthy food for my family. But I am a mom of like two little children, one nursing toddler. So the lack of sleep is certainly a big issue, and generally the level of stress is quite high. So my question is really, can you talk about the relation of stress and eating or compensating with respect to lack of sleep? And also, is it temporary? So can you bounce back once, like the kids are a little bit older, for example, and you get more sleep, will that go away on its own? Or at what point do you have to really do something about it? Thank you.
Thanks, Daniela.
Great. Thank you, Daniela, for your call. So it's really normal. We talked a little bit about the body biochemistry. Everything we do for good reasons, is what I tell people. And so even if we're finding that we're overeating something, eating a lot of sweets, perhaps feeling a little guilty about it, the idea is that we're attempting to help ourselves often. And foods that contain psychoactive components, sugar, larger amount of carbohydrates at one time can actually create a soothing effect. So the thing about food, unlike other addictions, not that you have an addiction, Daniela, but is that you can omit the substance. And some of the challenge that people experience with food is that it's difficult to just say, okay, I'm going to cut this out and divorce myself from this food. So it's really natural to use food to soothe ourselves. And, you know, I always tell people, have you ever eaten emotionally? Everybody raised their hand, right? How many people believe it's bad? A lot of people raise their hand. How many people are going to do it again? All the same people raise their hand again. So this really speaks to this idea and something I feel really passionate about, that we've created a culture of shame. We've created a culture of shame, guilt, blame. There's no room for having joy or fun or using food for pleasure. There's room for that. And it makes sense for Daniela, as your stress goes up, if you receive a benefit and feel soothed and comforted, even if it's temporarily, that makes perfect sense. That's a perfect behavior. It's just when it becomes persistent, it increases and it pushes you beyond maybe some of your own goals or values for yourself, that it gets your attention. And the second part to Daniela's question is about, can that change? Absolutely, 1,000%. You know, we haven't really gotten into the part about food is in relationship to you. So a chocolate bar is a chocolate bar. It's just an innocent chocolate bar sitting right there without any story to it. It's when we take food and we introduce it into our world, our biology, it's the relationship we have with the food that becomes the greatest concern. So hang in there, Daniela.
I agree. And the body is so resilient, and you can definitely bounce back. And we are so good about beating ourselves up all the time. And I'm always encouraging people to be kind to yourself. And it does not make you a bad person if you ate something. You were talking about food as being pleasurable, and I think sometimes we project our emotions onto food, and if you're eating something and thinking the whole time, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. This is so bad for me, and you're not going to enjoy it that way. And I think, you know, if you can eat something, you know, mindfully and without guilt, and truly enjoy every bite, sometimes you get a lot more satisfaction that way. And just to be kind to yourself.
We have another call from Irene in Chatham. Good morning, Irene.
Good morning to your guests as well. My name is Irene. Two things come to mind from the listening to the program, which was very timely. I was just diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, low, and I'm not as high as, you know, on the numbers, on the glucose scale, I guess, as I could be, but nonetheless, it brings tremendous guilt and tremendous anxiety over, oh my God, I know I have a terrible diet. I was on the road in sales for years, so I would drop in here and there and everywhere and get things like Diet Cokes or a bottle of, or a candy bar or something, or fries. And now I'm going to see a nutritionist next week through the hospital up in Emerson in Concord. I have another home up there. And I am just, I think I'm on hold this week, just processing the whole notion of what can I eat now? Because I once told my doctor very facetiously, I don't like food that's good for me, unless someone else fixes it really interesting and all this. Because I've never had a family that particularly cared about food prep and flavor and all that. They just, I had boys, and we just sat there and, you know, gave them what they wanted, pretty much. Healthy, but not healthy.
Right.
Help.
Oh, okay. Well, Irene, thanks for the call. We'll throw it over to our experts here.
So first of all, Irene, thank you so much for your call. And start where you are, that you have this amazing journey ahead of you of self-discovery and learning how to care for yourself in a new way. I have worked with amazing individuals who have really taken the opportunity, like a health diagnosis, to become super curious about how can I make some simple modifications. And it's a journey. It's not that you're going to wake up tomorrow and have everything perfect, but let yourself be open to learning, being curious, open to the journey of discovering how you can make some changes beyond what you ever imagined was possible.
Yeah, and you can absolutely enjoy some really good healthy foods and find pleasure in it, and you will get there.
Thanks for the call. Before we go, we're going to have to wrap up the segment soon. I just want to hear your quick thoughts about how to instill a healthy relationship with food in children so that we can bring children up with this appreciation for how things taste and to be a little bit more mindful about how they're taking in their food. I'll start with you,
yeah,
Dina.
I think just allowing kids to eat intuitively, listening to their body signals, eating when they're hungry, stop eating when they're full, not cleaning the plate or anything like that. Family dinners are so important. Eating, sitting down, eating together without distractions of television or a computer or anything like that. I think those are just two really important things right there.
Stacey?
Absolutely. One of the greatest indicators for healthy eating for children is modeling. So I work with a lot of moms and dads to learn how to practice being good models and providing that to their family system. I can't emphasize enough what Dina mentioned, which is beginning to practice family meals. It's an excellent time to get children involved in food preparation, talking about the nature of where food comes from and then sit down and enjoy it together in a pleasant environment.
Yeah, it sounds like it's almost like a habit. And the tips you had for children, I think, are wise for all of us, right?
Yeah,
it's
like,
not
absolutely.
Just it's not just kids. Well, thank you both so much for coming in. We'll post links to Kind Eating and Integrated Nutrition Services at the Community Health Center at our website, capeandislands.org. Stacy Richmond from Kind Eating and Dina Irwin from the Community Health Center of Cape Cod. Thank you for coming in. We're going to have
Thanks
you guys back again
thank
in
you,
the future.
Amy.
Coming up after a break, WCAI's